Oh boy.
I was going to say the recording didn't get your whoop, but whoop. Now it's going to start with your whoop.
Whoop.
That's yeah. Would you like to explain what you're doing, Jimmy?
No, the after show.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway. How you doing? Welcome.
We goofed off a little bit before we started, and it reminded me of a funny memory, which I'll tell you at the end. That's it.
Wow. Are you going to write that down? Because you definitely will not remember to tell us at the end of the show. Okay.
Okay. So, what am I doing? I've been working on the antique Cadillac Woody fabrication.
Which is looking super cool.
Thank you. Yeah, I got that angle down, and it really... That one little stupid thing a couple weeks ago I showed on Instagram where I got the slope right. At first, those bars came off of the cab straight out, level to the ground. And I was like, this is going to look like a van, like an unsexy van. And then after looking and looking and looking at more and more pictures, I started to realize that gradual slope, which is so subtle, but it's very important, apparently, because it gives the car a little bit of that moving forward presence, a little bit of that this is an established manufactured object versus just something that has something stuck to it. And it checked a couple of boxes in, and all of a sudden I was like, ooh, sexy. And then researching how these things are made, just really just looking at pictures, I saw how the roof was made, and it seems a lot of the roofs have this, like you're looking at the bottom of a canoe sort of look, with
like
the ribs,
the ribs
and the strips. And so last night I made some headway on that. I got the tires, which is really cool. It's funny, I go to this place nearby here, Mavis, in Greenville, New York, and they all act so apathetic. There's no way the guys will ever listen to this. So they all act so apathetic, like they just want to do it and be done. There's like no chit chat. There's no small talk. Nothing. And I brought in these antique tires, and they helped me get the tires off. And no chit chat, no curiosity. And I'm sitting there trying to film them. I go, "Can I film?" He's like, "You can only film through the glass." And never asked me why. Nothing. I'm like, I'm gonna get a rapport going with these guys. I bring tires there all the time. They just go, $20, you know, for the mount. No curiosity whatsoever. And then I go home with the tire. And then they almost flipped over one of the machines trying to take the tires off. I might have mentioned this last week. And I said, "No, just leave it. I'll cut it off with a grinder." He's like, "We don't have any grinders." I said, "I'll do it. I'll take it home and cut it off."
"We don't have any grinders."
And I said, "I'll do it. I said, I don't want to see you guys get hurt on my stupid tire." So I came back with four naked rims ready to be mounted. And he looks at the tires like, "I don't know if we could do those." I was like, "Well, can you try one?" "I'll try one." And like these are like big giant white walls that you don't see every day on red rims. And zero curiosity. And then one by one, they come out to, and they're all smoking, like everywhere they go in the whole place. And one by one, they come out to like flick their cigarette. And, what is this going on? "I'm going on a 47 Cadillac." "Oh. And then they go inside and they go, what kind of Cadillac?" Like, the curiosity is like too hard for them to acknowledge.
"I mean, like, I don't really care, but what
exactly,
kind of car is it?"
I'm in the middle of explaining like to the last guy, and he like walks away while I'm in the middle of a sentence. He's like, I've shown too much.
Yeah.
"I've shown that I care too much." Anyway, so they were like, "Oh, that's cool. Okay, yeah, that's cool." So... anyway, and not at all curious about why I'm trying to film every aspect. I put the camera on the ground so when the tire rolls it, because I'm not allowed in the shop. They've made that absolutely clear. You cannot cross this line. So I'm like outside the door like a patient waiting for the doctor to come out with my camera stuffed into the snow so it points up at an angle and so they could roll the tire out. Like, and it's just... not at all curious about the camera enough. It's just funny to me how some people just, they're like, "That's not my business. I don't see cigarettes in that direction. I am not going to get involved."
"I don't see cigarettes." That's pretty
but,
good.
So the tires came together really nicely. Found out I have one bent rim. He did come out. He's like, "Come in, so you're allowed in the doctor's office for this. I want to show you."
I have a question.
Show me the bent rim. One of the rims goes like, wee. He's like, "We can't balance this." I was like, it's fine. I'm never going to go fast. Don't worry about it.
I have a question, though. I was looking at those white walls, and they were blue.
Yeah, well, that's the protective coating that comes
with. Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. I was flipping through Instagram, and I'm like, whoa, that's a bold choice to have blue walls or whatever.
Well, it's funny because my brother was with me for a minute. He met me over there. I had to hand him off something. So he's like, I'm going to the tire place. Meet me there. So he met me there. He came upstate just to grab a prototype I had with me. And he and I watched them trying to mount the first tire, which was the mysterious one. They didn't know if they can get enough air in there. They had to use the air cannon. So there's like four guys working on it. And my brother goes, it's interesting. Do you think they can get more greasy handprints on the white walls? I'm like, I'm not sure. Maybe they can go get some paint. Maybe they can go get some spray paint and just spray paint black right on the white walls. The white walls look like they dragged it white wall down through the greasy tar pit when the time they were done. And I'm watching from afar. I'm not allowed in the operating room. I got to watch through the glass like an expected father. And he whipped a rag out and wiped it all right off. So it wasn't necessarily grease. It was whatever this black lubricant is that greases the tire on. So it all wiped off fairly easily, most of it. A couple little specks that I got to scrub off. But, yeah, zero concern about the white walls. Zero. Like, those tires are $400 each. Please do not get permanent grease marks. And the stickers that he peeled off of all the tires, all the stickers say, do not let black rubber rub against the white walls. It says it all over these Coker tires. Do not let the black rubber from the other tire rub on the white wall. It'll leave a permanent mark. Like, peeling the sticker off, crumbling up, throwing it on the ground, and leaning the wheel right on top of the other wheel. Let's
let me get this sticker out of the way so I can lean this tire on it.
Like, come on. But they care just enough. Just enough.
To get paid.
So that's my funny.
So what's your kind of like your plan with the rest of that, turning it into the Woody? Like, what's your kind of order of operations for getting to the final thing?
Like I said last time, it really, each operation is dictating the next. It's really amazing how this project for me is really revealing each step as I get into it. And it's one of those things where I always say this, like, well, I'm not exactly sure how I'm going to handle that, but I know that at least this part has to happen. So I do whatever is the easiest flow of operations. And that really, there's so much to do on this. And then also the old house, which I haven't talked much about the old house because it's been 10 degrees here and it's impossible to work in it. My neighbor has 180 acres of open field, and then there's the house. The way the wind's been blowing, I can't believe the house is still standing. So it's so impossible to work out there in these conditions. So I haven't done much. I'm moving certain aspects of the house along, and there might be a video soon, but there won't be too many conclusive cycles, only because I'm in the middle of a few. But getting back to the car, there's so much to do, so many things to do, that, for instance, I'd be like, oh, let me focus on the roof. Let me just cut the ribs. I'm working on another project off camera, and I have a lot of leftover wood. I'm like, oh, now might be the time to cut the roof ribs. So I showed that on Instagram. So I cut the roof ribs, and I'm like, Rob came back. Rob always grabs scrap wood from his place, but scrap wood from a sawmill is beautiful 10-foot pieces of mahogany in various cutoffs. He's like, yeah, this goes in the dumpster. I was like, so that's enough wood for me to make roof ribs out of mahogany, 10 feet long by 1-inch strips.
Wow.
So last night I milled up a bunch of that stuff. And each step is sort of revealing itself as it comes, and waiting on a few engine parts. We might do a little, we might do a big to-do when it comes time to actually starting the engine. Dave's going to help us, Dave from DTB Fab. And we might do a live stream when it comes time to at least try and start the motor for real. So that might be coming soon. I think this weekend is one thing. Next weekend is Workbench Con. I think I'm going to Workbench Con. I'm driving, so I'm not overly uptight about airline tickets. When I have an airline ticket, that's like, you really must go. When I'm driving, I'm always like, there's the slight possibility that it's not going to happen.
Well,
no,
I know commitment. You won't, but yeah. I want to offer, if you want to stop through and at least get some food or something.
Oh.
It's on the way. Well, I mean, maybe. I don't know if it's actually on the way. Probably on the way. Should be on the way.
Well, we'll see. I think Derek's going to drive with me, maybe. He's not sure.
I'd love to see Derek. I mean, you can come too, but I would love to see Derek. So tell Derek to stop through.
Well, we'll see. We'll see what happens. Like I said, it's going to be one of those like last-minute decisions. If you ever drive some faraway place, at least me, this is how I'm always like, well, I guess I got to go. And that's like 10 minutes before I'm getting in the car. After the car's all packed, I'm just like, I guess
stop
this
me.
Is,
don't try and stop me.
I guess this is really happening.
Go.
All right. And then I'm in Pennsylvania. I'm like, I guess I'm really going.
Have you ever seen the movie Hook? with where Dustin Hoffman plays Captain Hook?
Yeah.
Okay, so he like he's talking at this one point about how like it's just time for him to end it all, and he's like, "Don't try and stop me." And he's about to shoot himself or something like that. He's like, "Don't try and stop me," waiting for somebody to stop him. He's like, "Finally, somebody stop me, Smee." And he that's really funny.
That's like Kristen Wiig's bit. Kristen, which, by the way, did you guys watch the Saturday Night Live 50th anniversary? It was very good.
I've seen clips, but I haven't.
We've been watching the documentary first, the 4-part doc, which is amazing.
Where is that? I want to see that.
That's on Peacock. I don't know if you're subscribed to Peacock. Oh.
Wow, I gotta find that. That sounds like fun. Rachel would love that. Yeah, the all the clips are on YouTube. We watch most of them over the weekend. They're really, really funny. But Kristen Wiig does this character where she's like, "Don't make me sing." She's like an old vaudeville singer, and she's always at a party near the piano. She's like, "Don't make me sing," and then all of a sudden she starts singing. Nobody asked her. But that's what I'm working on. I'm working on the car, and each little there's so much to do. And I figured I'd do the roof first to try and get that curve in, and now I'm going to put the strips and. For most of the people that haven't heard this, because I really haven't pushed it, I certainly didn't say it in the last video, which I should have. I'm making this in August here in East Durham. There's a rat rod weekend where there's hot rods and roadsters zipping all over the place, and they're all rat rods, mean cars that are made up out of old rusty cars and made to look as cool as possible. Here in East Durham, August 18th. And I go every year for the last 10 years. It's really fun. It's at the same spot as the Blackthorn. It's the same spot as the Maker Camp. They have all events throughout the year, and one of them is this rat rod. It's always mid-August. It's super cool. It's all classic cars. There's a few really perfect classic cars, but most of the time it's just all cars made in mechanics garages like I'm doing with this. And I've always wanted to bring one there, and that's what this big thing is. So August 18th is my deadline. I got plenty of time. The project just came to be because it's winter, and Rob's like, "Let's get the car inside." So we got the car inside, and as soon as it was inside and we could lay on the warm floor and start pulling it apart cleanly without the wind whipping, once it was inside it was like, okay, so let's do this. And so that's really why we jumped into it, and that's why things are moving quickly. If it was outside, nothing would be happening, especially not in this weather. But that's it. August 18th. I'm certainly going to have something to show in July when the go-kart event takes place in East Durham, which is on my property. And then in August, the next month later, will be the Rat Rod show. Try and make it. So that's the culmination of this.
That's probably helpful to have kind of a point in time that you're aiming at to like get all the stuff done.
Yeah. And as long as it runs and drives, even if it's not, there's no judge or anything. It's just for me, it's just a fun thing to participate. I see all the cool cars that are made by these crazy backyard mechanics, and I'm always like, I could do that. I could have done that. I could have welded a wrench to a bumper. I could do that. I could paint old rims red. I could do that.
Yeah.
I could leave rust spots on cars.
Yeah. Patina.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's cool. That was the goal. And I'm always looking, and finally we found this, and I was like, the only thing that needs is a back, and I could make that part.
That half of the car part. Yeah.
It's funny. Rachel just keeps saying to me, "How do you know how to do this?" I go, "The funny thing is, I have no idea what I'm doing. I'm just guessing." But if you guess confidently, you look like you actually know what you're doing.
Yeah. I mean, everything got figured out by somebody. You know, it doesn't.
Yeah.
You can figure it out too.
And then shout out to Keith from Blackthorn Concepts. Keith is going to help me with the wiring, which is something I know nothing about. And so he was talking to me about a 12-circuit wire harness or 18-circuit wire harness, and he's like, "Are you going to put a radio in it?" And I'm like, "Nah." He's like, "Well, maybe if you want a radio, just go with the 18 because you get more options." And so I'm learning about that for the first time, too. I've never... Hmm. He seems to think... I mean, it's obviously some work, but he seems to think for him it's easy. He goes, "We'll install the wiring harness." I go, "Should I leave the floor?" But he goes, "It doesn't matter." He goes, "I can do it. Don't matter." So that's going to be interesting to see that process take place. So Keith's going to be involved with that.
I'd like to see that as well. That's one thing I know with the Ghia. I have a brand new wiring harness to put in the entire thing. But without having done any research about it yet, when to do that is a big unknown to me. Do I attach the two parts of the car before I put that in? That makes the most sense. But then isn't that going to make it really hard to run these bundles of wire and all these little offshoots to all the right places? I mean, on the Ghia, there's only actually stuff in the front and there's stuff in the back, so there's not a lot of electronics in between, so I don't think it'll be too bad. But I'd like to see somebody else do that. I did a little bit of wiring fixing on the Green Cruiser when the headlights weren't working and other things. And so I had to, like, replace some sections of it. But in that process of having to track where a wire starts at the fuse box, and then go to where it ends up being used, it is incredibly difficult in a car that's put together. So those people that are able to diagnose wiring problems in not just one vehicle, but vehicles, like, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So that's cool.
So it's going to, it's just going to be another one of the learning processes on this car. And then, and then this Saturday, Rob and I, this is exciting for the Instagram Patreon followers. This Saturday, Rob and I are going to go look at a 1946 donor car. Donor car.
Sure.
We get a full four-door 46 Cadillac for they're asking around 2,000, but it comes with good unrusty bumpers, good unrusty grill, same grill, rear fenders, which is something I've been needing. And when you find fenders from that era, they could be $1,000 each, or they're 50 cents each, and you need to basically remake them in the shape because they're so rusted and bent up. So it's hard.
That seems like something, like a fender seems like a good challenge for you. I don't know what the shape is, so I don't know how realistic that is.
Yeah,
but
it's real pain in the complicated butt. I mean, I want to find something that's also a little rat roddy and you know, maybe has an interesting color that I could leave if I could. Maybe. Because I'm not going to, I don't really have plans on painting it, making it perfect. And so that'll come with a full complete engine, replacement engine. So it has everything. It's a sedan, so it's four door, and a lot of the windows are busted, but the body's there and all the part, everything's there. So we're going to go look at that. And it's, again, it's because it's convenient. It's only about 30 miles away. It wouldn't be too far. Whenever I have to put something on a trailer, I'm always considerate. Am I going to have to drive 100 miles and the whole time worrying that this thing's going to flip off the trailer? Or if it's a short run, there's less chance for something to go wrong. So that's a candidate.
David, what did you say? You were on mute.
Yeah, this sounds more like a... This doesn't sound like a donor car. This just sounds like a car.
It sounds like the better car.
Yeah. So Rob goes, it would be, if we do get this, it's a shame to start taking parts off it.
Yeah.
It's like sometimes you got to break a few eggs to make an omelet.
I think you always have to break eggs to make an omelet. Pretty sure.
Sometimes.
So, always sometimes.
And then, but besides that, I'm trying to decide if there's something I could make in a video Thursday, Friday for a Sunday release. I've been going through my notes.
Quick turnaround.
Yeah. It happens about 50% of the time. Don't tell anybody. Maybe it shows. No, I was actually considering doing part two of the Cadillac, but I did part one just 2 weeks ago, so it might be too soon. Because I got enough, because that's all I've been working on. Just because it's exciting. It's like the thing of the moment.
One of our listeners, which is he's probably not a listener anymore because we only have super nice people who listen to our show. But a while back, I mentioned, you know, the videos take a week or two to make. And somebody who must have heard me say that on the podcast commented on my video saying, this should not take you 2 weeks to make. Just get rid of all the talking. Gosh. Yeah. Obviously, that person doesn't listen to the show anymore because we only have nice people.
Oh, man. Wow. I don't even know what to say about that. Well, David, what are you even doing?
Maybe this is a future topic because I find, and I know I shouldn't, but I find myself comparing what I do to everybody else. And I hear Jimmy talk about this huge project. This is going to take him a long time, and it's going to be so cool when it's done. And I'm just working on a little dog bed. It's hard to compare what I do to what Jimmy.
Rat rock dog bed.
Yeah. But I am working on a pair of dog beds. Again, this is, I think, the third or fourth time, but this is a pretty cool little design. My brother, I think the design is good. It's a little bit different than what I normally do. It's kind of, we'll say, loosely based on triangles, which maybe came from when we stayed at the Triangle House in Frank Lloyd Wright. The Frank Lloyd Wright house. But my brother was saying, as we were making this, he's like, this is one of your coolest designs ever. And to me, it's simple. And I was like, oh, thank you. I like the design. I don't know if it's one of the coolest, but I'll take that. But anyway, I Yeah, that's it. And I have an update on the previous project that we were talking about, which was the resin vase, which you can see behind me. And I made a whole pedestal. And it Whoa. Almost fell. and it was a couple of epoxy pours, and you wait so long for it to kind of harden up, and then you form it into a shape. And so there's two layers to it.
Really looks good.
Thank you. And there was supposed to be another layer. Like I wanted it to make it look like it was dripping and melting into the pedestal. And so I made the forms for the epoxy for all of that. And then I was just going to have this like dripping onto the pedestal. And I got to a point in the project where I'm like, I don't want to anymore. I'm excited about the dog bed, and I'm done with this. And I had this, like, I could just throw a coat of finish on the pedestal. It's made out of walnut plywood, and this would be done. But I don't even want to do that. I just want to move on to the next thing. And so I was Googling, like, what's it called when you spent time on something and you don't want to finish it? And I came across this phrase. Bob already knew the phrase. I had never heard of it. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. The feelings I'm having about this, because we need to talk about what Bob's making or working on. Yeah. But this started this whole thing, and I just realized I don't have to finish a project if I don't want to. I'm not making it for anybody. I'm making it for myself. Me. Yeah, but it's not the... It could be finished. It's not the completed idea that I had in my mind, right? And it feels like, well, if you don't complete the thing, then why did you... I don't know. Why did you do it?
That's interesting. I'm going to write that down so that we come back to it, because there's actually two topics there. There's what you're talking about, and then there is your definition of finish. Because those are... Yeah. I'm just going to write the word finish. So quickly, I'll talk about what I'm doing, and we can get right back to this, because I'm not really doing much. I finished up the Panna court that I was talking about, the little soccer court thing. They had their tournament this weekend, so I went last week and on Friday and set this thing up. And it was really cool, because I made it intentionally to be able to be assembled and disassembled with like a half-inch ratchet. Like, that's it. And so there's just some lag bolts in each one of these corners. It's a hexagon shape. So it went together super fast. It got beat up by these kids. Like, I underestimated how hard they were going to be playing in this little area. And so I went out there and got some footage of these kids playing, and it was awesome. Like, they were going at it. And apparently this game is not like a soccer game where, you know, you've got this long period, you've got a bunch of people, and it kind of, you know, depending, it's 25 to 45 minutes depending on the age group. This is a 2-minute game in a small space with two people. And so it's basically sprinting for 2 minutes. You get 30 seconds of break, and then you do another 2 minutes, and you do this over and over, and whoever has the most points after whatever time. So these kids were wiped out because they were working so hard.
Yeah.
It was awesome to see that. Anyway, the tournament went well. The game held up well. I had to add another latch, because when they would kick the ball at the door, they were kicking the ball so hard that it would knock the door past the latch that I already had in place. I had a ball catch and an actual physical drop-in latch behind it, and they would hit the door so hard the latch would pop out and the door would open. So we have to add another latch. But other than that, I mean, it held up great. Everybody was really happy with it and everything. So I'm finishing that video up, and then this week I've been back on the course stuff, trying to shoot more of the course, and I've already run into this thing where I started shooting this in January, and I'm trying to shoot it with updated Fusion, right? So like before every chapter that I do, I go through and I make the thing in Fusion, and I make sure I'm saying the right buttons and the names are called the right thing and the right things are in the windows. Last week, I wrote up one of the chapters. Today or yesterday, I opened up Fusion and there was a new button. I'm like, what the heck, man?
Curses.
Oh, give me a minute. So I know by the time I finish recording this thing, it was an unimportant button that, you know, it wasn't even something I was going to talk about. But I know that there are already going to be things that are going to be not out of date, but you know, it's changing out from under me as I do this thing. So luckily, I think I've covered all the big changes since the original course, but it's just one of those things. I'm always going to be playing catch up a little bit with them, and we're going to have to just go back and update certain videos like we have in the past, you know. But I'm still trying to do that on a regular basis, trying to get the chapters shot, because there's so much editing and there's so much like B-roll we have to shoot for it. And building a course is, if you've never done it, is way more intensive than you might expect. Just the sheer amount of footage and organization for sections that are in chapters that have, you know, a two-camera thing and a screen capture element, and then there's B-roll, and you're trying to do something and say what you're doing at the same time. It's more difficult than I remember. So, you know, I'm getting through that, though, and I've only got a few more chapters to do, and then I've got to go back and do all the fine-tuning stuff.
Is it actually more difficult than it was before? Because we get better at what we do, and our what we consider good is better than our good from our previous
change.
Yeah, the standard is
changed. I don't actually think it's more difficult than before. I had just forgotten the amount of effort that it took to do it the first time. And the first time I was also, I had an outline, and so I was talking. I would look at my outline and say, here's the thing I'm trying to accomplish. And then I would talk while I did it. And that led to a whole lot of ums and ahs and pauses and redos and stuff that then Forby had to edit out. So he had a significantly more difficult time with his end of it then. This time I've gone through and I took the transcript of the last course, and then I went through that and re-scripted it to be modern and current, you know. And so now I'm teleprompter reading it, and then certain parts I will, you know, add in little things that I didn't script. And so it's definitely going faster than it did before. But the effort of reading a teleprompter and doing a thing, doing a thing on the computer in Fusion and explaining what I'm doing and trying to keep that, you know, concise and moving along and not, oops, I clicked the wrong button. Oops, I accidentally selected the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. It's just effort, whatever. I'm not complaining about it. But it does take more time than I remember it taking, even being faster than it was the first time. So I'm spending a lot of my time on the course, and I'm beginning to feel the thing that you were talking about. Mm-hmm. I'm beginning to feel the, okay, I want this to be over with now, because I want to get back and just build some stuff, and I want to go work on the Gia, and I want to, you know, I don't want to sit in this room anymore. I want to turn off these lights, because there's like 18 lights in this little tiny room. And so, yeah, that's kind of where I'm at with that. But there were a few people that reached out in the last few days about the flooding here in Kentucky, and they were checking on me. I really appreciate that. We're totally good. Luckily, our house is really high, so we wouldn't, personally wouldn't have any flooding problems anyway. But even around our area, there was some flooding, but it didn't, you know, it wasn't catastrophic like it has been in some other places. So we're good. But thank you for checking on that. The other little thing, my camera mount, I can't show you the one that I have my camera on, but I made the webcam mount thing a few weeks back for a video. Mm-hmm. And I said that I was going to sell the files in the video, and the files are selling, but I also have been, I put a link to actually sell the thing itself. So I'm printing them and assembling them here and then shipping them out and everything. And the sales have been a little overwhelming in a good way. Not overwhelming as in too much to do, but really consistent. And I've gotten some good feedback. I put a little piece of paper in each one of the boxes. It's like, hey, this is me trying to figure out a product. So if you have feedback, tell me. And people have been emailing and saying, oh, like, this would be cool if it did this, or, you know, I need help with this. How do I route my cable or whatever? And that's been really cool, because that has pushed me to come up with some more different ideas of how to do the same thing. And, you know, I haven't really pursued any of those yet, but I've got a bunch of sketches here in front of me. And it feels cool to, like, to have an idea that now I'm interested in iterating on. because mm-hmm. what we often do, all of us, is we make an idea. We make whatever the best version of it we can come up with in this amount of time. We make it, and then we're on to the next thing. And so I rarely revisit ideas, and it's kind of cool to have this one. Like, I can't make another video about this. That's fine. But there's at least enough interest in it for me to continue to improve it and to figure out ways to make it more flexible and work for more people and stuff. So that's been kind of cool, you know, kind of different for me. But back to your idea. So you said, I think a minute ago, that you had been working on something so much that you didn't want to work on it anymore.
It's not that it was, not that it was so much. It was just, I found that I lost interest, and I think I know why I lost interest in it. And it was because I wanted to try this resin technique. I wanted to make the silicone molds, and I wanted to do all these things that I didn't have any experience with. And I got to do all those things at the very beginning of the project. And I got the satisfaction of learning how to do that. And then the excitement for the project was left. And there was still a lot of work to do. And
get it.
I think even though the other ideas that I have to finish it are good, it doesn't feel like it's... Like it's a little outside of what I normally do. It doesn't feel like it's, that doesn't say Pachuto to me. And so I just lost interest, and I had this, and I knew I wanted to make these dog beds. And so I just wanted to move on. And so the excitement just went away. And I kind of experienced this a lot. When I get close to the finish line, I start to lose interest. I just want the project to be over with. Maybe that's a side effect of social media, you know, the immediacy of you get that satisfaction and you scroll. If you don't like something, you just scroll to the next thing that you do like. And maybe that's translating into real life world stuff. But this, when I was looking up, like, there's got to be a term for this, and it's called sunk cost fallacy. And the most simple explanation is just because you spent time on something doesn't mean it deserves more. Or you could say, just because you spent money on something doesn't mean it deserves more. No. And when
there's sunk cost and there's sunk cost fallacy, and there is a little bit of difference. Finish what you're saying, but
I don't know the difference, and so I'm looking forward to that. When I read the definition of just because you spent time on something doesn't mean it deserves more, it punched me in the face, because I feel this so much. And it's really weird and odd that a certain phrase or just learning the meaning of something can have such an impact. But it was like, it was freeing. It was like, oh, this is a thing. This is a normal thing other people experience all the time. And it just made me feel so much better. I'm like, all right, I don't want to finish this project. I don't have to. And I'm going to move on. And now it just like got rid of the guilt instantly.
Gotcha. So there is a little bit of a difference. And the reason I asked you what you tried to get you to reiterate what you said is because the sunk cost fallacy is a little bit different from my understanding. Sunk cost fallacy is your reluctance to give something up because you've invested so much in it. You have, like my cruiser, that's my personal example. I have waited so long that I'm reluctant to just let Jimmy go and steal it for me and bring it back because it's probably at the 95th percentile of being done. I don't know that, but that's what I assume because I've invested so much time into it. See what I mean? And so the fallacy is that if I wait just a little bit longer, if I put just a little bit more in, it's going to be able to be finished. And I've been thinking that for a year and a half or longer. And so that's the fallacy part of it. And the difference, I think, in that idea and what you're saying is that you've run out of steam to get that last, I don't know, 20% of the thing over the finish line because you've done the interesting parts. I would be interested to know if there's a name for that thing where you got the fulfillment out of learning the thing, trying the thing, doing the thing. And now there's just this leftover, like the administrative work of, Yeah, I just got to put finish on it and do the outro or the video, and then it's done. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I think mm-hmm. those are slightly different things.
There's when it comes to doing what we do, making things for camera, in many cases, not all, but in many cases, all the big changes take place. And then you're left with the finishing, the colors of the things that aren't really going to be on camera. There's the this, there's the, you know, in the case of the car, like the tire pressure, the brake adjust, like all these things that don't translate to camera. Whatever it is, whether it's you want to change the color of that base, but the base already exists. I mean, you might get a little bit of a richer color, but in your mind, you're like, it's already done. The base didn't exist, now it exists. Am I going to take it that much further? Is it going to really matter? I have other things that are more important to do now. So once you get to the 80%, it's there. Again, in the context of shooting for camera. And then there's those few things you're like, if I just shoot it from this angle, the whole video will be done, and then I'll be done. But then it sits around, and you're like, you knew you should have painted it. You knew you should have put rubber felt feet on it. You knew you should have waxed the leather or whatever it might be. And then in your mind, it always lingers. That thing is just sitting there going, don't finish me. Like the fly, like Brundlefly. It's like, finish me. Sitting in the corner of the room, and you walk by it all the time, and it goes, finish me. And you're like, you ignore it. And that's what's bugging you, is that little... You hear the thing go, finish me, behind you.
So I wonder if that has to do with...
That's definitely part of it.
I wonder if that has to do with, you know, like, those are all changes that have to be made. Like, you made the point of there being big changes at the beginning. Something didn't exist, and now it exists, right? That's a pretty significant change.
Yeah.
Something existing unfinished, and then existing with finish on it, it's still a change, but the change is not as dramatic. So maybe it's a case of
that's what I mean. It's like it's so insignificant. You're like,
as you get further through the camera thing, those transformation moments and the amount of change that happens, with each one of those little efforts, gets smaller and smaller and smaller. And then I wonder where that point is, where the amount of change, you know, me doing this thing is not going to change it enough for me to be interested anymore. Like, what is the name of that point? Because I think that's the thing that you're talking about.
Yeah.
Or that's how I feel.
Another detail, most people know this, but most people don't know this. Some people don't. When we shot that TV show on Netflix, we would take the project to a certain point, and then the director would be like, okay, we're done. And then it goes to the art department. And then we would shoot this phony scene where we're looking at it done, going, and the camera would be on all five of us, all six of us going, wow, it looks really good. Oh, wow, I can't believe it. And we would just make stuff up because we were looking at the unfinished project. But in the end, they would cut to the 3 days later when everything is detailed up and all dolled up looking at it. So our point of view would then be shot 3 days later once the art department finishes it. So you could always tell this point in time in the edits if you watch the TV show Making Fun, where we might walk out of the shop and flip the switch off. The project is still only 80% done, but it's enough for camera to get that portion of the story completed for the edit. Then it goes to the art department. The art department does all the fun details that you see at the vinyl reveal, and then it cuts to us in the end doing a big smoke and mirror thing.
When I worked at the ad agency, the creative director got to do all the cool stuff, like design the logo and lay out this pamphlet or lay out what the homepage of the website's going to look like, all the creative stuff. And then when it got to the part where all the work, you know, the little details has to be done, it gets pushed off to me or one of the other designers to finish it. And all the cool stuff has already been done. Now you got to figure out how to cram the client's 50 requests into this tiny little,
So I'm trying to figure out how to look this up. Like, what would be the term for this thing that we're talking about?
Derek says this, and he's going to laugh if he ever hears this. He says his wife calls him Mr. 80% because he takes all of his projects to 80% and never finishes them. Like, the bathroom in his house has got sheetrock with no paint on it. It's got, like, a door frame with no paint on the door jamb, or maybe there isn't even a crown molding or shoe molding on the door. He says, yep, I'm Mr. 80%. He builds the stairwell, but he doesn't put a finished layer on top of the stairs, treads. Mr. 80%.
I mean, I think that's super common. Yeah.
I think I've said this before, but the last 10% is 90% of the project.
It's the hardest part.
It's the hardest part.
You gotta run it. You gotta run an extension cord all the way to the third floor. You're like, that's even harder than making this thing from scratch, is having to run an extension cord.
And on top of all of this, when the weather's bad and it's cold, and I have to walk the 20 feet outside in the cold and the ice, and I didn't shovel because I'm lazy and I've got wet socks, I just don't. My motivation is definitely way lower in the winter than it is in spring, fall, and summer.
A funny thing about snow, since we're in the season, is how many times do you look at a path and you go, I'm the only one that's going to walk on it. I don't care if it's shoveled.
Yeah.
And then in 3 days from then, it's like 40 footprints of solid ice. And then you're walking on it like you're on a tightrope wire. You're like, it's only me. It doesn't matter. It's only me.
So here's the thing. If you don't live in a snowy climate, what happens is if you shovel right away, right after it snow falls, that's the easiest time to shovel. But if you walk on it for a few days and then try to shovel it, you can't, because where you've stepped turned into ice and it's frozen. And now it's just going to be like that for months. Yeah.
It's like walking in the death zone.
You have to do the penguin walk. I always walk with my hands in my pockets, but now when I go outside, I have to do the penguin walk where I'm balancing and taking tiny little footsteps.
So I found, trying to search this out, it sounds like the term burnout actually means the place in the process where you've lost motivation.
Okay.
It's a state of exhaustion or emotional depletion which significantly reduces your drive to continue with a task or activity. So I never really thought about the term burnout in regard to fuel, but I guess that makes a lot of sense. You know, if your fuel going into a project is like, I love learning processes, I love transformation, I love, you know, those types of like really before and after type changes, if that's the fuel, once you run out of that, a place to burn that fuel, you know, the changes are not that big. I guess that is a kind of burnout. That's not really how I think of that term, but I guess it kind of works. The other one listed here is this is pretty dramatic, Valley of Despair.
Oh.
A metaphorical term describing a low point in a project or goal where progress feels difficult and motivation is low. That is a pretty dramatic way to say that. But I guess that is kind of like it's the Empire Strikes Back of a project, right? It's like you start really high, the whole three-act thing, where you start really high, you've got all this motivation, and then you get to this point where you like, you've lost it all, everything is bad. And then at that point, you decide, are you going to turn the story into a three-act story where you go back up, or are you going to make it a really crappy movie where you just end the thing right there in the bottom when everything's bad?
Bob, know? Google memes for the process of being an artist, because I've seen them, the funny ones where it's like, oh, wow, I came up with the best idea. Yeah. And then it's like, why did I do this? My life is horrible. I'm going to commit suicide. Oh, wow, this looks cool. There's like three stages of the artist or four stages of the artist.
Yeah, I don't know how to find that, but yes, I've seen that as well. And it's like this cycle that always gets back to starting the thing over.
Yeah. Oh, wow, I have such a great idea. Oh, my God, I'm going to kill myself.
This is the worst. I shouldn't do this, you know, and it goes back around.
My life is meaningless. Something to that bit.
I decided to end that. I felt so much better. I think the video for it is going to be fantastic because
it looks
still
incredible.
Thank you.
It's really, it looks like really like high-end art. Like that's something you'd see in Chelsea in an art gallery, and it would be $30,000 flower vase.
It's like working on the Woody, but just getting the side panels done. But the rest of the car is not what you envisioned. It doesn't start. Yeah. What's the point? And then So I felt good just to end it, and the video is going to be great because I talk about all of this. And then I worked on the dog bed, which is just basic woodworking. And I went right back to my comfort zone. I knew how to do every single step for the dog bed, and I had it all planned out in Fusion. So I knew all the crazy angles that I had to cut, and all the complications were taken care of before I even walked into the shop. I didn't learn anything new. Except I got this thing that I made that I had the vision in my head. I made a simple sketch, and I only had to make one sketch because it was exactly what I pictured in my head, and everything just flowed smoothly from beginning to end, and it felt good. And we got great footage of this, and then the video is going to be great for that. but I just go back to comfort.
Well, but I mean, don't you think that's a pretty natural and okay swing as an artist, as a creator, to like, you know, to, you're going to be challenged sometime, but you can't stay, you can't live in a place of constant challenge. I mean, that would be exhausting.
Yeah. Right?
You have to be able to swing back to like, this is what I know. I can do it. I can put food on the table and then I can swing back and I can do this thing that is difficult and hard and nobody's going to watch. And then I can swing back and make a table or a, you know, whatever, something that I know. I think that's pretty reasonable.
Yeah.
I think, you know, for the person who is determined to be a starving artist, there are certain people. I went to an art school, so I know a lot of these people who were determined for life to be difficult as part of their art. There's just a lot of those people that assume that it has to be challenging to make good art. And that's fine if that's the way that you're looking at life. But you have to be willing to accept the fact that with that, you are intentionally making your life harder and difficult. Yeah. And I think that's probably not as sustainable, you know, because whether it's the money end of it or just the stress end of it or the constant need to be creative in new ways, which is exhausting. but I think as somebody who is just trying to be creative and have a creative life, you have to have some kind of breathing to it, some give and take, some back and forth, some up and down. You know, that's going to keep it sustainable.
I'll tell you something interesting that applying it to the car projects that I've done. In the past, I bought a 1967 Cadillac convertible that showed up, and I played with it. I was all excited, and I started getting into the fixes here and there. And then the one thing that I didn't expect is that it wasn't that exciting for camera, and even for me without a camera, to just fix stuff that needed to be repaired. Welded a piece of metal for the rusty floor, fixed the window motor, get the dirt out of this, and get the dirt. In my mind, I was like, this isn't quite as creative as that need needs to be filled. So that project I lost a little steam on, and I said, why did I lose steam on this? Because there's really nothing for me to create out of nothing. It's there and on to getting right again. And it's not as exciting as it is for me to make something out of nothing. And then I got the hearse, the Cadillac hearse, which showed up, and it needed nothing. It was a perfect collector car, and it was cool to own and obtain, and this interesting story, and you know, it had some weird juju that I just kind of liked, and I thought it was cool. But then again, there's nothing for me to do except be the keeper of it. And you know, like I'm the guy in Christine. I just got to make sure nothing happens to it. And so that didn't quite fill the creative need. And then now that I'm involved with this car, I can't keep my hands off it because it's all just figuring it out, making stuff from nothing, converting this. There's no pressure to make it perfect. There's no pressure to make this look like exactly the way it's supposed to be. There's no pressure to preserve something because it's so far gone. For me to preserve it, it's pointless. I got the car missing several key components, and it wasn't like when I got the hearse, I wasn't going to, like, one of the only things I did to the hearse is the radiator leak, so I pulled the radiator out, and I went and had it rebuilt and put back in. And when it was getting rebuilt, the guy said to me, this is a complicated old radiator. I can give you a new one with a different top. It won't look the same. I was like, what will it cost to have it look the same? He said, oh, it'll be this many more hundreds of dollars. I was like, well, then let's do that. I don't want to, you know, I don't want in my tenure to put an aluminum radiator in a 1958 car. And he goes, okay, fair enough. So he fixed the right way. So like that. So I felt like I was the keeper of the thing, like I was a museum curator versus creative outlet for me. And that's ultimately why I got rid of that too. But now that I have this car as a means to have a creative outlet, it's really free flowing. That's the point I'm making. But you get to the point where you realize, like, what am I? Whether it's a car, obviously, or anything. What am I doing here? Am I just restoring something? Well, if that's what the goal is, that's cool. But if there's a need to really flex your muscles as an artist, you got to find that project that's going to do that. And as an artist, as a lifestyle, it's going to happen all the time.
I think with the Ghia with me, I've definitely felt that thing that you're talking about where it's exciting to take it apart. It was exciting to start to fix little things. And then it's just like, yeah, look, more metal, more body filler. Look at that. more it doesn't of look the same.
The change on camera looks the same, so you're like...
Exactly, yeah, which makes it difficult to even want to make a video about, because it's like there's not going to be a big enough transformation between... There's going to be a huge amount of work and very little visual change.
Mm-hmm.
So that, yeah, I mean, I'm definitely in that valley of despair on that car right now because of what you just said, you know, that I'm in that place. But at the same time, you know, there's this... And this maybe doesn't apply to what you're working on, David, but I can look ahead at the potential transformation on the other end of this bodywork in the car, that if I can get through this and start to make that climb uphill on doing the chassis work and rebuilding the engine and putting in those brakes and all of those little things, it's going to start turning into a car again that is going to look 180 degrees different than when I took it into that barn. But I have to start climbing the hill. You know, I have mm-hmm. to keep going toward that thing and inching my way toward it. But because if I stay where I am, it's never going to get to that, you know. And on your project, David, and you were like, you know, at a point where you need to put finish on it and everything. I think one of the things that was interesting when you first started talking about that to me is, how do we, you know, and we've talked about this before, how do you define when something is done? And what is your threshold, your personal threshold for you're creating a thing, when is it finished? What does it require for your brain to say, check, this thing is done?
Mm-hmm.
And you look at that thing and you think it needs this and it needs that and it needs that. And that's part of your checklist for being able to like really mark it off. But we can totally adjust that as an artist, especially. You can adjust what finished is. It doesn't have to be your original intent. It doesn't have to be, but you know, for by anybody else's standards. So being able to decide how to finish it at any point is part of the freedom of creating art, right? Is like you can yeah. decide like this doesn't have to have I'm using the word finish and finish together, but it doesn't have to have wood finish on it for it to be finished. Maybe that was your original intent, but maybe it doesn't have to. Or what is the quickest way, the least friction I could possibly put into place to get it to my definition of finished, you know?
Spray with a water bottle so it looks like it's...
My point is there are ways to, like, if getting it across a finish line, checking that box and saying it's done, there are ways to get yourself through that just to, like, get it over with. It's not cheating. It's not shortcutting. You're free to change... As an artist, you're free to change your goal or your...
Yeah. The thing here is there's nothing I need to fix. I found my satisfaction. I found a meaning in that phrase that just said, hey, you can move on because that's it. That I there's nothing to fix. That project is done. I'm pushing it out of my life, and it was just I don't need to do anything else, and that feels so good. I'm ready to move on to the next thing. And I think just learning what just processing all this information just helps me realize, like, I'm not working for anybody. This is not for a client. This is just for me.
Right.
I'm here to film my learning process and having fun and making stuff. If I don't want to finish something, cool. I'm sure there's other people that feel the exact same way. And so, yeah, it was a very freeing moment for me. And nothing needs to be fixed because I somehow fixed it.
Right, yeah. Yeah, decided.
I don't need to cross the finish line.
Right, it didn't need fixing. Yeah, that's
yeah.
There's another really important aspect to all this that I've brought up in the past, and it's the compromise of the design that nobody knows about. How often, as a product designer or as a service engineer for whether it's like software or anything, where you're faced with three choices that nobody but you knows, there's one choice you really want, but it's too expensive or it's unattainable because you need to get a truckload of material or the minimum quantity order is too low. But then there's this other choice, which is feels like you're compromising your integrity. But nobody's going to know.
Yeah.
And you have to make that decision behind the scenes. But for the rest of your life, you'll always look at that going, that isn't exactly what I wanted it to be. But everybody around you goes, oh, my my God, that's the most amazing thing you've ever created. And in your mind, you're like, not really. But you never say it out loud. And you live your life as a failure because you didn't take it that extra 10% that you know you should have. But for some reason, who knows why, there's always a million reasons why you can't get it to that next step. So you compromise your design internally and you live with that and you just never have to say it out loud. Until you meet somebody in confidence that is also in the same boat, and then the two of you talk about what garbage you are and how you make nothing but crap.
So I have a personal example of this. I'm a proud dad, right? So my daughter writes and sings music, and she plays guitar, and she plays piano, and she's amazing. And she writes songs all the time. And they're not like, you know, pat on the head, kind of like, oh, good job, you wrote a song. They're like, they're good songs. I'm a very picky music person. They're good songs. Anyway, so she writes the song. She gets the chance to perform it at this statewide school event. So she's performing in front of hundreds of people. She practices on a guitar that's not hers. She practices beforehand, warms up. It sounds amazing. She goes up, and she has to fit this long song into 2 minutes, so she had to trim it down a little bit. So she goes up, she starts playing, and she forgets the lyrics. Being on stage is difficult, right? So she forgets the lyrics at the very beginning. So she starts humming, and she sings this beautiful little thing, and then comes in with the lyrics.
Nice.
And plays the song. And she gets done with the song, and the room goes crazy. And people are screaming, and they're clapping, and it's amazing. And she almost starts crying, and she runs off the stage because she messed up her song. But I guarantee you, you're saying, nobody in that room knew that it was wrong because it sounded amazing.
But that feeling never goes away of her feeling like she
exactly failed. Because she had an intent. This is what it's supposed to be, and I didn't do that thing. And it wasn't in practice. It was the one performance. And so, like, I empathize with that feeling for sure. But even as somebody who knew the song, who knew what to expect, I was still like, oh, this is cool. This is a new little... She's, like, humming it. And then I was like, I figured out why. But it sounded amazing, and nobody in that room would have known the difference, you know? Yeah. So, it happens. But
it's a touching story.
She's awesome. She's awesome. Someday, we're going to release some of her music, and...
Amazing.
Yeah, you guys will hear it. But
lovely.
Yeah.
Anyway, any other thoughts on this?
When something like that really gets me in the gut and I think to myself, why did I go down this route? I found the little thing of the creative artist, which we could read in a minute.
Got
some dirty words in it. But
Are my favorite words.
When I get to the end of that cycle, I always, my consolation is, I'll just do it again some other time, or I'll do something like it some other time. This isn't a one and done. I'll always have the opportunity to revive this process. Pottery is another perfect example. Every time I do something in pottery, I'm like, okay, now I know I can do these three things and be okay. Like fire something that's the wrong cone and you get results versus a burnt, crispy nothingness. You just keep finding your way through the dark. Now, I came up with this analogy the other day, and I don't know if I ever said it out loud, but I've said it before. Where life of anything, whether it's being an artist or whether it's being in relationships, I've always attributed to being in a relationship. It's like walking through the same room 1,000 times with the lights off and always knowing where you're going to hit your toe and then always finding something new to hit your toe on. And by the time you're 90 years old, you'll be able to run through that room and not kick anything with the lights off.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's what being in a relationship with another person is often like. But it's also the same relationship you have with yourself and your workshop and your materials.
I like that. That's cool. So this process that he's talking about, this is a little thing that's gone around a bunch of different times. It says, this is the creative process. Number one, this is awesome. Number two, this is tricky. Number three, this is crap. Number four, I am crap. Number five, this might be okay. Number six, this is awesome. And it's this cycle of going around of like, oh, yay, oh, no.
I am crap is the funniest one.
Yeah.
Because you're always like, I should have just became a fireman. I don't know why.
Well, Walmart is always hiring. I want to thank our Patreon supporters because they're awesome. And they let us do this show and support what we do. And we're very, very grateful for that. There's a ton of people over there that support us at all different levels, and the top supporters that have been there for a long time. They go above and beyond. I always say this, but we are super grateful for what they do in addition to what they, you know, really need to do. It's a group that we're really thankful for. That's Nick Ryan, Corey Ward, Albers Woodworks, Works by Solo, Chad from Mancrafting, Rich at Low End Design, Odin Leather Goods, Sean Beckner, Scott at Daddy Yourself DIY, Jeff in the New Janky Workshop, Warren Works, Michael Menegin, Crabtree Creative, OMG Made, and A Pretty Big Deal. But
thank
also,
you
people like... I was looking through our list, looking for somebody that is not on that list that I could shout out. I saw Stephanie from Uncommon Outpost. Stephanie's awesome. Stephanie does all sorts of stuff, and we see her at events and everything, but like she's really awesome, and she's been on our Patreon.
Stephanie's like the maker Lucille Ball. She always makes me laugh.
Oh, that's so good!
Isn't it?
I've never thought about that. That's perfect.
I hope she takes that as a compliment, because I mean it like it.
I'm sure she would. That's awesome. Yeah, she's pretty great. So if you want to join the Patreon and get the after show, everybody on there at every level gets the after show. You can go to patreon.com/makingit, join up, and you'll get that RSS feed in Patreon. You can take that RSS feed and put it into your podcast player. That's the word I was looking for. And it'll show up. It's just another show after this show. That's why we call it the after show.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're doing. If you want to go check that out, again, patreon.com/makingit, we would appreciate it. Do you guys have anything to recommend?
I do. Because I'm going to maybe do work with him this week if schedules coincide. And I, John, I hope I don't mess up your last name. He said it to me. You guys know John Kripoff. Kripoff. You know who.
Oh, yeah.
Am I saying his name right? John Kripoff?
That I don't know. I've only seen
him. But John's been working he's an incredible filmmaker, and he's going to laugh. He's right now, he's giggling and he's turning bright red when I say this to him because I know how he is. He's doing a series of Alphabet on the Shopbot CNC, and I keep reposting them when they pop up. And we're going to do the Z together at my shop next week. He lives in the area, so he's going to come up. And just go check out his beautiful filmmaking on the shorts that he's doing with Shopbot CNC. He's doing the whole alphabet, and I'll send you guys his stuff. So
cool.
John Kripoff, and he's been around for a long time, and he's really shining with these new videos.
He's got a beautiful shop.
Yeah, he's doing a skateboard thing today, I think. He's doing a skateboard class, and he got Tony Hawk to promote it. I don't know how he got Tony Hawk to promote his skateboard class. So, dude, that's an incredible get. I don't know how he did it. But
Tony Hawk seems like a pretty cool guy. He probably just sent him an email.
Maybe. Yeah.
Yes. I just want to say, I love John. John is fantastic and a great supporter of
everybody.
I just want to, again, say thank you guys for just being able to talk about this stuff. When I had this little breakthrough a few days ago, I got so excited. I went and found Kelly. I'm like, I just fixed all my problems. And I told her about this thing.
Wow.
I feel so much better. And she's like, okay, that's cool. And she's like, well, are you abandoning the video? And I'm like, no, the video is going to be about how I fixed my problem. And then I get to talk about it with you guys. So it's always comforting to be able to figure out what's going on in our heads. And
you know it's
going to
be a good one when you get a topic concept at 8 a.m.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I thought
like 9:06.
Yeah. Well, I thought, oh, if I text these guys, maybe they can, you know, just think about it for a few minutes and have some insight. And Bob's like, oh yeah, we've talked about this before. I experienced this all the time with the car. So anyway. I have two picks, because one pick is the reason for the other pick. My first pick is a local friend of mine, Tony. He has a YouTube channel called Acme Supply Company, and he's a local artist. He's also a tattoo artist. Didn't do my tattoos, but he's a local tattoo artist, and makes some really cool creative stuff. And we were having lunch a few weeks ago, and he's like, hey, you got to check out this channel called Synodrome. You will freaking love it. And boy, was he right. Synodrome is, his name is David Fogler. And I believe he is friends with Adam Savage because I think they've worked on a video together. his channel only has 5,500 subscribers, which is not enough because his videos are so incredibly well done. His projects are kind of like if Adam Savage, Casey Neistat, and had a baby, but his videos are of his own style. Baby. Yeah, and Tom Sachs. There's a very Tom Sachs element to it too.
It'd be one ugly baby.
But his video style is completely his own. Has a cool aesthetic, and he's not worried about making short, punchy videos, and I love it. He will let things just play out, and there'll be 2 minutes of just build, and sometimes there's music, sometimes there's not. And it was watching his videos, that was almost freeing. I'm like, yeah, I can have a 2 minute part of my video of just the build because I find it interesting because I've seen somebody else do it and I found it interesting. I'm like, oh yeah, I can slow down. Synodrome, everybody here should be watching it and he should have a million subscribers because these videos are so well done.
Wow. That's high praise. I'm excited to check him out. Yeah. So mine is, I actually don't even know this guy's name. I was looking up those, like, what are they called? VersaTube buildings, like the metal buildings where it's a kit and you can buy, you build out on their website, you build out the size building you want, and then they send you a kit with all of the steel girders and everything that you need, and then you can build the building like by yourself. And so I was like looking into that, just curious how it worked and what kind of connections they made and stuff like that. I found this guy's shop build where he's building one of these himself, and I really just wanted to see the assembly process. And then he's talking about how he's building this thing to put his Porsche in, and then I went to look at his Porsche and he has like an old 944 that's lifted and he uses it for like off-road stuff and in the snow, and I'm like, oh, this looks like a pretty cool guy. And then he's got a Land Rover Discovery that he's working on, and I'm like, oh. And so the further I got into it, I'm like, oh, I think I might hang out with this guy. I don't know. So anyway, they're pretty cool videos, and he doesn't have a big subscriber base. 10,000? Well, that's bigger than I thought it was. But anyway, it's like car stuff and shop stuff and well-made videos, and you know, there's like some engine things and tire things, and he's building a shop. And so, you know, there's a lot of stuff there. The name of the channel, I don't really know how to say this. I would assume it's his name. T-F-R-A-S-C... Hang on. T-F-R-A-S-C-A. So maybe T. Frasca? I don't know. I don't know his name. But go check it out. He's got a lifted Porsche. That's kind of all you need to know.
Just the banner image on his YouTube channel. That car looks amazing.
Yeah, yeah. That's kind of what got me. I'm like, yeah. But there, you know, there's some car stuff in there and then off-road stuff as well. That was kind of neat. So go check them out. You guys got anything else for this week? Jimmy still has a noise to explain to us that he doesn't need to make again, but he has to explain the noise to us in the after show. Oh, there it is. So, so we're going to go do the after show.
Makes me laugh every time.
Cool. Well, thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you, everybody.
We'll catch you next time.
Bye. Boop. 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 Okay. It's so dumb. It makes
you
gotta, me laugh.
You have to tell him that you love him. I can't end the show.
I thought I said I love you. I love you.